You're listening to the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information.
Good morning. This is Joe Cooper. I'm on my first podcast. Titled is Cooperstown. We'll call it the Hot Stove League for local baseball. Of course, the Tigers right now are just about ready to head over to Lakeland, Florida, and they're looking to have hopefully an improvement of the season. We've seen the last couple of years this team has been taken apart down to its roots. Maybe even the organization itself has been taken down. But it's necessary, bring in new players, lower salaries, and hopefully bring in, what some people would think, better talent. But really, that's only going to be something you can test in the next year or so. You're not going to see these guys come in and dominate or be an everyday starter right away. The Tigers have had a problem of listing these players as future stars and giving you 10 to 20 guys who you're supposed to hang your hat on as part of the next world championship team here in Detroit. The truth of the matter is this team doesn't know, or the organization doesn't know, how far these guys are ever going to go. Baseball is the hardest thing to predict. Both pitching and everyday hitters. We've seen it with center fielder Jacoby Jones, as well as even lesser talent guys like Mikey Matuk. You see flashes of some guy hitting 240, maybe having a couple good weeks, even a couple good games in the Tigers' case, and they list him as a future star. The problem is, we're seeing the local version of how much the Tigers build up their team. Whereas when you see the national version of what they list the Tigers as, these players really aren't going to make it for more than a couple years. They're really just holding a spot on the roster until someone better comes along who can knock them off. My issue has always been with this team, or the front office itself, not listing their players they want, who they know will be everyday players, maybe stars. You can't give – the best you can hope for is having these guys make it to the majors and taking up a role for a few years and seeing if they have any value, you know, either on your team or maybe packaging them together in a trade of some sort. With the Tigers, we have quite a bit of pitching they're trying to promote. The problem is the everyday player just isn't here on this roster. The few guys they do have have been acquired through trades, whether it's involving the Verlander deal and a couple other guys who, in Jacoby Jones' case, I think it was Joaquin Soria was his name. These guys do have talent, but they're fourth outfielders. In this case, a guy who should maybe get 300 at-bats and push himself as far as he can go into the lineup, not on an everyday basis, but yet the Tigers try to call him an everyday center fielder. What he is a good field, good speed, but really no hit. And most of these guys have two of possibly five skills that you need to be a star. And it's not really indictment against the player itself, but it's really the organization, the front office, who try to push these guys along as everyday players when at most they're just part-time players who don't have the full skills. Some of these guys might need another year in the minors. You know, even if they play, you can't just stick a guy out there and say, he's our center fielder, he's going to get 500 at-bats, let him sink or swim, and then a year later when he struggles, they end up cutting him. In this case, we're talking about a few guys who need to share the time with another player, you know, not get overwhelmed, maybe shorten their stroke or swing it is. And the Tigers seem to push these guys to the point, because they have no one else to offer their fans. I understand you have to break up this team, but in this case, the Tigers really didn't have a very good draft last few years. Since Nick Castellanos was probably the last player you could say made it to the majors, there's, you know, you're talking about 35, 40 rounds of players who just, you know, don't make it. I mean, you get guys like James McCann who might make it all the way to the majors, but really they're just a part-time player who struggle in other areas, and within a couple seasons, they're out of the organization altogether. So I think over the next few minutes, we're going to just discuss some of these guys who Tigers have, and you can go around the infield, and we'll start with first base. We have Cabrera coming back. Of course, the superstar is getting older, and you know, he'll hit his 25 home runs. Probably won't see the average quite as high, but we will see a guy who's going to be hurt more often than we want to, you know, think it's going to happen. But the truth of the matter is, the guy, when he's getting over 35, he's breaking down. It's Victor Martinez all over again. And Miguel Cabrera is going to be DH as soon as the Tigers can find themselves a first baseman who can take more at-bats. But unfortunately, the problem is he's not getting hurt just in the field. It's swinging the bat. That was the bicep injury last season. We see a guy who at times can, you know, still have the power, but with his had leg injuries, has taken away that power a couple of seasons ago. He was really just a singles hitter at times. But he will, for good or bad, be in the lineup for the next few years, and we're just going to have to deal with that. Second and short, well, we have, I think, just fill-in guys. We picked up a guy from Pittsburgh, Jody something. Don't know the guy's last name. I can't remember offhand. Played a few years in the National League. We're going to get a 240 hitter who is a decent fielder, but again, he's not going to be – Kinsler is going to look like a superstar compared to him, and he's probably a cheaper version. But the Tigers still have time to pick up more players. I mean, there's over 80 guys who declared themselves free agents who have not been picked up yet here as of the 2nd of February. I think the number was 160 when the offseason began, and now we're talking – maybe 70 plus have been signed. Of course, that deals with waiting for the bigger stars in Harper and others to be signed. And then you see a big increase in the next week or two before these guys have to go to camp. Not that it's absolutely necessary, but we just have to accept the fact that free agent pickups, the whole system has been pushed back a month, maybe two, until these guys are just about ready to enter camp. I mean, it's going to bring down their salaries. And where fans talk about looking for off-season moves, you're not going to see anything until a list of bigger names are off the market. But in the case of the Tigers, or a lot of other teams, to be honest with you, at least five teams in the American League, these teams are not going to be going after big-name stars. They're just taking cheaper alternatives that they have and trying to make the best of it. And a player like Jody Mercer, that's the second baseman, the Tigers could have waited even a couple more weeks and signed him now and maybe saved a little money. These guys don't have many teams to consider when the star players, there might be a half dozen teams that need a, say, a middle infielder. But after a while, these guys become a dime a dozen as far as who to pick up. You can make an argument for everyone that they have something to offer, but probably even more reasons why they shouldn't be. These players are released or not offered a contract extension because they can't produce on a regular basis. And we're going to see that happen here in Detroit with the shortstop position. And also probably you're talking another outfielder spot and even at catcher. We're going to be told that the future is a young catcher coming up, or what we currently have. And we've seen Avila and a couple other guys come through here in the last few years, who really the Tigers just tab as a possibility of someone who might, at best, they're just platoon players who should be one of two guys who get equal time. And we just have to accept the fact that that's what these guys are going to do. We're going now over to catcher, let's say. Young guy by the name of Rogers, who's down at Double A last season. He's probably going to start the year either at Triple A, and should really spend an entire year there. These guys can't be given a spot in the majors because you have nothing left. They need to, in my opinion, earn that roster spot by hitting for a certain average. You don't hear it from the front office of what they need to do. I mean, when a guy hits 250 at Toledo, what's he going to do here in Detroit? But you'll hear from the front office saying that he's the best alternative right now. Yeah, that's probably true for what you currently have on your 40-man roster. Thanks, Al Avila, for that. But Jake Rogers or James McCann, these guys are just fill-ins for right now until, in Rogers' case, he gets 500 more at-bats. There is a point when a guy has to be brought up to the majors, and he'll probably get a September call-up. But that's all he should get until this guy is maybe hitting for average. We've seen it too often in the past with players such as Brandon Inge and others who hit 220. Maybe they field and the Tigers quickly determine or tell the public, oh, this guy has it all, you know, as far as what we need. We need a guy who can hit for average and, or I should say, can field and play every day at a certain position. But really, these players are only part-timers. And just have to accept the fact that we got probably two more years of this before some of these players are weeded out. It would be interesting to see in 2 years how many of these guys stick with the 40-man roster. I mean, they don't turn into part-time players, but rather they just get released altogether. Because there's such a turnover in these, when your age group of 22, 25-year-old guys coming up, you only have so much time to prove yourself. And if you have a position, you're in with the Tigers, you can play a couple years, maybe get some stats, show other teams. And we've seen it where other players come in here, maybe hit even 15 to 20 home runs. I think two seasons ago, Mikey Matuk had a pretty good year, and he was quickly tabbed as an everyday player. But then last year, digressed, even sent to the minors, rediscovered his swing, if that's what works for you. But the Tigers really were without anyone in that position, and they're going to have to improve their on-base percentage. This team always seems to have power, but too many solo shots end up amounting to nothing because you have players who can't get on base, draw walks, and even the power hitters need to have a better eye. I mean, ripping a single to left could be easily something more if they get the count in their favor. 2-0-3-1, drive the ball up the alley, and possibly more home runs. We're looking at, I don't know who at shortstop. We have players at AAA who are just, you're going to get another year. We're having about outfielders who Jones playing center and Castellanos for now, who I don't think will even be with this team at opening day. If the Tigers had their way, they probably would take an offer right now. I don't see Castellanos having that great of a year where he's going to have a 330 home run status where teams are going to be crying for him at the All-Star break. He's a good player, but he's not a superstar. And we're going to be disappointed, I think, when we see how little you get for a player who was going to be available, and we're just not going to get very much for him. What you end up having to do then is keeping the player, offering him a one-year contract, which he might turn down, but yet go on free agency, and you end up getting some sort of compensation the way of a draft pick, which might be what the Tigers end up doing, considering that what they're going to get in return. Too often you see players, when Stanton gets traded from Miami to New York, how many of those guys do you even hear about yet who might make it to the majors? And these are superstars. And really all you're getting in return is the money being taken off your books by another organization. You're not getting talent. You're not even really getting hope as far as true, I'd call long-term talent. A couple guys that were still waiting on in the Verlander deal, they look like possibilities. But you never get a guy who's going to be on the verge of making to the majors when he gets traded your way for in return for a superstar. Tigers are, you look at the rest of the American League, the division itself, White Sox, Royals, even the Twins, they're all rebuilding in some way or waiting for guys to improve their status. Cleveland, for that reason, is looking at an easy division title, and they're also looking to probably get rid of some of their current roster, save some money. You've heard about trades involving Corey Kluber, which you're trying to rebuild a roster while not losing out on a possible pennant. In Cleveland's case, they're good enough to win the division, but you look around the rest of the American League now, I think they've lost their opportunity now with New York, Boston, and Houston all just overall better team. Cleveland does have a very good pitching staff, but that's probably their strength is why they're looking at trading Kluber. They need some everyday players. Brantley is now gone free agent, and a couple other players. The White Sox, that's what I'm worried about the Tigers are turning into. Every year you're hearing that they have young players up and coming, and then they're going to suddenly top it off with a superstar. You're really playing a dangerous game of trying to sell that to the fans and then thinking to yourself that this is going to work. In most cases, when you do pick up a star free agent, it's after these guys have proven themselves, some of them at least, who are first and second year players who have stayed in the league, and you're just adding that one or extra two players to put you over the top. In the White Sox case, I think they're trying to go after Harper and Machado and think that that's going to keep this. If you sign a guy for 6 years, sure, in 3 years, maybe some of these other guys will make it and you have a decent team, but I don't think you have a championship team. Why not build up the rest of your team? Going after Arenado, for example, next year would be a better bet for a team like Chicago. I think Harper and Machado this season are going to wait for a contender to offer them a deal that's closer to what they expect. They've been waiting a little bit longer than they wanted to, but eventually some will throw the money their way. Teams like the White Sox, Padres, they're really just being used, much like the Lions in free agent. You have to throw 20% more just for a superstar to look your way. And then they end up just using your offer to go up against another team and try to get them to ante up just as much. And if they come close to it, then that star player will go to the contender. Why not? I mean, these guys have 5 years. Why come to Chicago, who's still in the rebuilding phase? They haven't proven. They have names on paper. I mean, San Diego, for what I hear, is they got the one of the best minor league farm systems in all of baseball. And this team is truly going to start to turn the corner in about a year. But you're not getting any superstars going their way, because if they do want to go to California, it's going to be with Los Angeles or San Francisco. We're not going to see too many teams even contending this year. In the American League alone, just named off most of the Central, probably a couple teams in the East in Toronto and Baltimore, not to mention out West where Texas, Seattle. Right there we have 8 teams out of the 15 who are, you can just say right now when the season starts, they're not going to win the pennant. Now, will they someone who surprise you at the All-Star break? Sure. Oakland did that last year, even made the playoffs, but they're knocked out in the wild card game. We even have the Angels with Mike Trout, you know, not having much of a team surrounding them. You have Pujols getting older. You have the pitching staff never really getting developed. Ohsani, their superstar import, now is strictly just a hitter, which he will be a star, it looks like, but it won't be for, you know, both hitting and pitching. This player is going to be probably hitting 30 home runs this year, but taking the year off from pitching, recovering from Tommy John surgery. And we have the rest of that league where Seattle is completely rebuilding, has made several trades. But the one thing you've seen in the last few years, these teams don't just sit there and slowly crumble down. They get taken apart quickly. In Seattle's case, Cano is gone as well. I wouldn't be surprised if Felix Hernandez gets traded. He is not anywhere close to being the same player he once was. We might even see him get put in the bullpen, become a closer of some kind. These guys are brought up when they're 19 or 20. You have 10 good years, your body starts to give out. In Hernandez's case, I thought this was the same thing that was happening to Verlander, but he was able to, you know, overcome that, you know, develop more pitches. And Houston has ended up with a great player who, you know, he's a free agent at the end of this year and might even just consider re-signing with Houston for a couple more years. But you will never see these 7-year, well, even a 9-year contract, which Prince Fielder had with the Tigers back in 2012. That will never happen. You'd have to be a Mike Trout, maybe a couple other guys to even get a 7-year deal right now. But some teams will get desperate at some point. This team here in Detroit, we're 2 years away from seeing any type of free agent movement. Most of these players are just fill-ins, as we talked about. We have other organizations who have talent. They're really getting these players. It's a scouting department that has outdone Detroit for the last several years. When you look at the top list of up-and-coming players Detroit has, they're usually from trades or first-round picks the last 3 years when the team has finished poorly in the standings. They're no longer developing these players. You don't see an everyday shortstop or outfielder, number one pick a few years back they had, who hasn't developed at all. And the Tigers don't bring this up. I mean, you only give these guys maybe up to 5 years from the time they get drafted out of even high school. And if they haven't made it through double-A ball at that point, you stop hearing about them. And the Tigers, you just move on. I mean, these guys, everyone knows, you know, players don't maybe hit their stride until even the mid-20s, but you can't wait. These guys are churning and moving up the levels in through the minor leagues. But we already have most of the talk about guys being drafted in the last year or two. And just how it is in the paper, it seems to be the job of the writers to promote the younger players and give fans hope that the team is just a year away when, fortunately, you're looking at probably 3 years. A couple more years before these guys start to play in Detroit. And then they're going to need another year or two to develop into a decent player. If you look back even into the 80s when the Tigers were building a future pennant contender, you see Trammell and Whitaker turning themselves into everyday players. They were everyday players to begin with, but their power developed. Inconsistencies such as Parrish and even Kirk Gibson, these guys were hitting 240 and below, and they probably hit their stride. Took Gibson about at least three seasons with the Tigers until he was playing every day. And you look back at the roster, no one ever hits it big right off the bat. You don't get a Mike Trout coming out, getting 500 at-bats and hitting 290, and then keeping that up for 5 or 10 seasons. You do occasionally get a guy who might have one good year, and then the Tigers end up having to move these guys to a different position. You know, you see Nick Castellanos, you know, coming up as third baseman, but never being the fielder you could depend on. I didn't realize just how bad he was until they showed all these stats with saying Castellanos probably the worst third baseman in all of the American League. But that's what the Tigers are dealing with. We're going to have to accept the fact that this team is just not going to contend anytime quickly. Let's go over to the National League. We see teams that have, you know, that window of opportunity still. The Cubs and Dodgers are still at the top, but they're looking to hope at least have these guys come back. Chris Bryant, in the Cubs' case, having another good season. He's been hit by some injuries. Dodgers, I do think Harper is still considering any deal that the Dodgers might have. We've seen the Dodgers make a couple trades this offseason, get rid of Pugh and Matt Kemp, which seem like an obvious sign that they are opening up a position for acquiring Harper. And at this point, it's really up to some of these free agents just to accept the fact they're going to have to take a little less money. I hope they can get by with $200 million rather than the expected $280 million. But somehow they'll scrape by. And in the Dodgers' case, they have an easier road. That NL West, the Rockies are in the last year with Arenado. So if they haven't signed him to a long-term deal, they might even have to consider trading him in July. And we are looking at Arizona being rebuilt. San Diego's been in the building process for a few years. And when you get down to it, the Dodgers are probably going to have an easier ride to another division title. They might struggle for times, but they're going to win their 90-plus games. Whereas you have the only other team, the Giants, are going to hang in there, maybe win closer to half their games. But again, in the end, the Dodgers have the most talent. They have the most resources. And much like the Yankees, that as long as they come close to matching their expectations, they're going to win that division by probably 10 games plus. Now we go over to the Central. The Cubs are starting to have their window close a little bit. You have Lester still with the team leading that rotation, but they're not getting the production from some of these guys that they thought they would. Around the field, you got Rizzo and Bryant at the corners, and you have Hayward struggling in right to bat, you know, decent average, but still a very good outfielder. And I see this team coming around, maybe winning 90 games, but, you know, you have the Brewers doing the same thing. This is probably the tightest division you're looking at right now, with some improvement from, say, the Reds. And I think the Pirates are in this division. So, again, it's going to come down to the Cubs and Brewers, but everything's starting to tighten back up now. So we're going to see just a better race when you get down to September involving more teams in the National League. But in the case of the National League East, we still have a few players are left undecided. If Harper goes back to Washington, and anything can happen with that team. They seem to have the money, much like some of these East Coast teams, the Yankees and Mets. Washington seems eager to spend it. So we're going to be at a point now where whoever ends up with that superstar probably will be the difference maker, at least in the first half of this year. So that will do it here for now. Our baseball hot stove. And I have my lovely wife, Amy, to join me now.
Hi, everybody.
Amy is, I would call, a Royal Oak resident of the past.
Right.
We're talking between the years of, 1997 and 2002.
Somewhere in that range, like 96 to like 2000, yeah, because then I moved to Ferndale after that.
Amy built a home. Well, I should say she.
Yeah. No, I lived in a converted two-car garage apartment. So someone else converted it. We just lived in the backyard. It was really fun. Lived with a roommate, and it was definitely challenging. The house didn't have great heat or anything, but we turned it into something cute. It was fun. We put a patio on it and had parties and, you know.
Now, when you get to that type of house, do you say, okay, this is the one we definitely want? Or is it simply the one you could afford at the time?
Well, so right after college, I moved home for a hot minute, and my parents were charging me rent. So, that was their plan to get me out of the house, and it worked. So
then, welcome home. Don't keep the door closed.
Exactly. Don't let the door hit you on the way out. So we ended up moving. I moved with a friend of mine to what we considered to be the Detroit area, and it ended up being Wixom.
Ooh,
and if y'all are familiar with Wixom, especially in 1995, way back in the day, there wasn't much going on. So we only lived in that apartment in Wixom for a year. And then we started meeting people that actually lived down here in the metro area and found Royal Oak and decided we wanted to be a part of that fund. So we started looking, and everything was so expensive. I mean, we were just out of college, broke, you know, yeah, doing minimum wage or entry-level jobs and, you know, trying to figure it out and wanted to be a part of the fund.
Did you have to think we're going to accept something that's either – very small.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we had very low expectations. We, you know, back in the day, you know, it was stuff that wasn't online yet. So we went through like a rental agency. So it was just almost like, you know, a job posting board, but they had apartments posted on a board. So, and things in Royal Oak at that point were moving really fast because, again, it was like this new thing 20 plus years ago. Almost 30 years ago now, which is insane. But anyway, you know, we'd go and check it out on a Saturday, and by the time we went and looked at the apartments on the list, they were already gone. So this one house came up, and like, we literally, we went in and the open house was that day. We just dropped everything and rode over there and, like, met the landlord guy. And he was like, yeah, I've had 6 offers already. And we were like, here's our first and last month's rent. And we, like, had $200 in cash on us, too. And we're like, put that towards it, the deposit or whatever. He was like, okay. So he did a credit check on us and we passed, thankfully, because we didn't have debt yet. I moved in, like, within 2 weeks. So it was crazy.
When you say this place...
It was literally like, so there was a house in the front of the lot that was broken up into 3 apartments, and then this was the former 2-car garage that he converted into 2 small bedrooms, a teeny tiny little living room that was big enough for our couch, and that was it. And you had to walk through the living room to get to everything else. Kitchen and bathroom, and like you had to be short in the bathroom because it was the back slope of the garage. So like, yeah, like I could barely stand up in the shower. Like it was definitely like it was good enough, and it wasn't like the house was awesome, but the location was awesome. So
now when you're talking at the time, you were working where?
I was working full time at that Frames Unlimited in Birmingham. I was I was doing, you know, whatever at the time it was like $8 or $9 an hour. Ooh, that was a big deal. And I was on the management track, so I was going to eventually like be a store manager.
Okay, but between Birmingham and Royal Oak, you still have, you know, Ferndale, you have Berkeley.
Yeah, and again, we were new to the area, so I knew the spots right around work that was at, like, whatever that was, Telegraph and 15?
Yeah.
And then now we were discovering Royal Oak. Ferndale was not even a thing.
Mm.
It was still, you know, Hazel Tucky,
sketchy,
shady. Yeah. I mean, not bad, but not great. Everything that was cool was happening in Birmingham that was expensive and Royal Oak that was coming up. So we, you know, we lived right off of Main Street in Royal Oak, and we would, every weekend, we would just walk from our house down Main Street. So, and, you know, we're in our early 20s, just out of college. So, of course, we went to the bars, we went to brunch, you know, we did all that stuff. So, you know, it was fun. It was cool.
But how long did you stay there for? I mean, didn't you say you had some problems with, you got broken into or?
No, we were fine there. Basically, we lived there for, I can't remember now if it was 2 years or 4 years. Isn't that sad? I can't remember. I think it was 2 because my roommate then was getting married to the guy she met, right, in Royal Oak. So
okay,
they, you know, lived. She lived with me while we were planning the wedding and stuff. And then as soon as she got married, she obviously moved out. And I couldn't afford the rent by myself because even for a converted 2-car garage back then, it was something like $600 or $800 a month, which for us was a lot. So I couldn't afford that by myself.
But then you did find a place in Ferndale where you bought your first home.
Right. My dad convinced me that, you know, the housing market was really good and it was time to commit and I could buy a house and then have roommates pay me rent that would pay for my house payment,
okay,
in theory. So I found a little bungalow in Ferndale for like $70,000. Again, this is like, whatever, 2000 or 1998, somewhere in that range. I think it was 1998. Because I think I lived in the house for 4 years. Yeah, so that would have been right about 4. And then we met in 2002. So,
but you,
yeah.
You deal with a lot of students who are looking for places to live when you're at work at Wayne State. Now, would you tell them, I'll go ahead, rent downtown, get the lifestyle there, or try to move out?
It's so different now in 2019 than it was in 1998. I mean— Right. Everything keeps changing. So Detroit went through bankruptcy and now they're in the big boom. And so students and people who aren't working great jobs full time can't afford rent anywhere in Midtown Detroit where it's quote unquote safe and gentrified and whatever. Rents for a crappy tiny studio apartment are like $1,400 or $1,500 a month. So what people are doing now is they're moving further and further back out into Warren, into Madison Heights. Not even Ferndale, because Ferndale's priced out of the market now, and so is Royal Oak. One of my recent graduates, she and her boyfriend are renting a house in Madison Heights, and it's $1,400 a month. But they, again, are both new out of grad school, have decent jobs, and they can afford that. But they can't afford, you know, they're paying off college loans and stuff, student loans, so they can't afford, they don't have money for a down payment on a house of their own. So they're paying that much in rent. So again, just how things have changed so much in like 25 years or whatever it's been, it's insane, right? So yeah, at that point, the way our kind of system was set up, I could afford to buy a house at $70,000 working a $10 an hour, you know, job.
Right, but I mean, you did, you struggled, but you fixed the place up. I mean, you did turn it around and, you know, make a nice profit on the place.
Yeah.
It seems to me like these students are spending so much, $1,400 a month. If they could find anything to, you know, even 5% down, they could move into a house. But
finding anything that's available, because again, you know, we're still pretty fresh out of the housing market drama. Mm-hmm. So people that own houses are probably still underwater and trying to make some of that money back.
That's true. That's true. Now,
how did we get talking about all this
housing stuff? We're talking about the housing stuff just because I was amazed at how much you wanted to live in Royal Oak.
Yeah. Well, it was the place to be.
Where were your places? You know, talking about places you used to hang out at.
Yeah.
I mean, some of them don't exist anymore.
True. Let me think. Okay, so I'm drawing a blank.
I mean,
on
even
all the
when
names,
we were
though.
Going out, we saw places that are now no longer here. Memphis Smoke.
Right. Memphis Smoke was new for us. So when we lived here, it was just being built. What was across from Memphis Smoke?
Mr. B's.
Mr. B's was a big one.
That's going.
Is that gone probably?
It's or
is it
closing
going
away? Or being sold? I don't know which it is.
And I can't believe I'm drawing a blank on the restaurant on
the
Washington. That, oh my God, was so good. And it's booming now. Well, I don't know if it's still booming. I'm actually trying to look it up while we're talking. But
the one where they used to paint it every few months?
Yeah, in all the crazy bright
Pestos
colors.
Or something with a P.
Right? I'm drawing...
By the music theater.
Oh my gosh. I'm drawing a total blank. I'm literally like Googling brunch in Royal Oak because it'll come up. I can't believe I can't remember that place because we basically lived there.
But would you say Washington Avenue is...
Well, it just depends, right? So again, like...
I know down on Main Street further down going towards the highway, what used to be... The Oxford Inn,
right.
A normal restaurant, that's gone.
Right.
And a few other names. I couldn't even tell you in the last 10 years. And I haven't lived down on the east side for 10 years. But everything has either changed to a different name or closed down.
Right. Well, and again, it's been 20 years, so it flips. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like what's interesting and new 25 years ago is going to be old and boring. So they're going to just kind of try to keep reinventing themselves. And oh my God, I can't believe I can't remember the name. Like Goodnight Gracie was new. You know, a lot of this stuff. So, and like the one I'm thinking of isn't even coming up. Pronto. Oh,
Pronto.
God. I know that. Oh, yeah.
That's
Pronto's
still around?
Was, I think so. So Pronto was new. And it was like.
I said Pesto.
You were super close. You were super close. Yeah, and it was just fun, and the food was amazing. And then they added on to the original little, like, brunchy sandwich restaurant place and had added the bar. And then it really was LGBTQ friendly, and then it was a gay bar and, like, fun stuff. So we didn't go to that part of it, but the vibe was still there throughout the whole place. And it was just super friendly and fun and open-minded and cool, and we were like – this is awesome. You know what I mean? Like, again, kind of coming from our lives up in Grand Blanc where we were, you know, pretty sheltered and pretty living in our own little bubble of ignorance. And so coming down to Royal Oak where, you know, people were young and having a good time and doing whatever they wanted to do was really exciting for us. So it was cool.
But you see places now that, you know, like a piano bar, which used to be the Dueling Pianos in Pontiac was a kind of an older place, but now they got newer buildings that have it. And I don't know what type of crowd exactly comes in, but it seems like you're pushing out the average college kid and getting a more expensive crowd in there.
Well, again, what Birmingham was 20 years ago and Royal Oak was the new young place, now Royal Oak is like Birmingham where it's older people and more expensive and more exclusive And Ferndale then took over as the kind of Royal Oak for the young people. But now, again, 25 years in, Ferndale's becoming more upscale and more older people. Like, I think it keeps shifting back south, right? So it was Royal Oak was the cool, hip place. Then Ferndale was. Now it's Detroit again.
Right.
So anybody in their 20s is going to go hang out in Detroit in Midtown, where all the restaurants and bars and breweries and the axe throwing and the foaling and the all that new fun crap.
Oh, I miss those axe throwing days.
I don't think you've ever thrown an axe in your life. But anyway.
Not for fun.
Right. But yeah, I mean, it's just.
But it's
you know, it's how it changes.
Yeah, I don't remember. When we lived down in Livonia, it's always been Novi. They've never really developed.
Well, 'cause it's suburbs. It's suburbs, yeah. suburbs. It's so much sprawl. You know, there's some restaurants in Livonia, but not a ton. And so everybody goes to Canton or to Plymouth or to Novi or to Northville. You know, Livonia to me is like the blue collar cousin, right? Like it's fine, but it's like family style restaurants and not like anything hip and cool.
But you know, when you're down at Wayne State, you have some kids. You know, they're not driving around, but they're looking for places to go.
No, they're taking the bus. They're taking the Q line. They're taking Uber. They're taking Lyft. Yeah, okay. They're taking those scooters in the nice weather. They know what they're doing. They're you know, their hips are cool.
I don't know if I could do scooter stuff. I mean, isn't that like after Thanksgiving, like give away the snow?
Yeah, I mean they're gone for the winter, which is great because they're annoying. Because people literally just leave them in the middle of the sidewalk when they're done using them. But if you're able enough to use them during decent weather, it saves you a ton of time and energy. You can get somewhere way faster and cheaper, you know, instead of, God forbid, you walk, you know, whatever, across campus or something. Yeah, so it just depends.
You know, you were talking about taking the Q line. I mean, that Q line's been around now for just over a year.
Yeah.
How much have you taken that in the past year?
I have never taken it.
Oh, there you go.
But I've had health issues the last year where my mobility was challenged, so I'm going to get in my car that I can get in and out of, that I can count on, and I'm going to go where I'm going to go. But I haven't been, like, hopping and bar hopping in Detroit either. You know what I mean?
But you don't see people saying, I'm going to take the Q. I mean, with Uber now, it's just so much easier just to then pick you up directly right from your
spot. Yeah, it depends on where you're going and what your goal is. If you have, you know, time and you want to stop along the queue, that's a lot of the restaurants are right there on the queue line now too. And that wasn't on accident. That's on purpose too. So, you know, but if you're trying to get to the game and then get back to your car,
right?
That's the queue true. Line's direct, but it's going to take you a while too.
And then when you guys go out for lunch and things at Wayne, I mean, do you sit there and say, yeah, it's going to take us a half hour just to get to our car, drive somewhere and come back?
Sure. And that factors in. So, again, the thing that the young folks do nowadays is Grubhub or Uber Eats or DoorDash, where they call a restaurant and have it delivered, and they'll pay for the convenience, especially in the bad weather. So it's kind of the new way of doing things. You know, it's convenient, and you're paying for it, so everything's more expensive. So a $10 lunch becomes $20.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
So it's only really worth it if you have you're ordering for four people.
Well, it depends on what you consider worth it. Right? Because the students that I see now, they're doing DoorDash just for their own meal every day. And I have two people that are in their 20s. One got DoorDash yesterday and one did Uber Eats. And they got them from different places, but they didn't think to, and they were sitting next to each other figuring out what they wanted for lunch. But they didn't coordinate to try and save any money. Like, it's just not.
But you don't see part of the people bringing anymore. Their lunch like a student anymore.
It depends, right? Yeah, it depends. You know, yeah, no.
I mean, they're not high school. I mean, college kids. I mean, in the spring, maybe fall, you get more people hanging out on campus and buying things on campus.
Yeah.
But it's not cheap on campus either.
No, and there's not a lot of options. We're getting better. We're getting way better. But, yeah, I mean, it just depends on what your focus is.
Now, are there things this time of year or coming up in the spring that you want to see downtown? Is there events coming up that?
Well.
Things that you haven't been to. I mean, you go to, you know, Flower Day and things of that nature. But, I mean, are there events at the Opera House? I know you wanted to see Hamilton.
I really want to see Hamilton, and it's so expensive. And now people are posting online, I just got my daughter tickets for her birthday. I got tickets yesterday. And it's still, like, I think the cheapest thing we're able to go, like, $300 or $400. And I get it, but I just can't justify the expense. But then I sit there and go, but I really want to go see it. So
now, do they have events how they do at the Masonic where they have special days where you can get tickets?
I have heard that rumor, but I don't know if it's actually true. And because the demand is going to be so high, there's going to be so many people that are going to try and go for it that it's going to be probably near impossible. So I might try and do that one day if I've got time to kill and like, what the heck, you know, if I don't get it, I don't get it and I lose an hour of my life. But if I get it, then I get to go see it.
Well, so just send one of your student assistants out there.
No, because they're the ones waiting in line to get their own tickets. They're not going to wait in line for me, by the way. Jeez. My minions, go do it.
Make it a project. How to survive in the wintertime getting Amy good tickets to a show.
Nice.
Write a one-page report on it. And make sure Amy gets tickets within the first 20 rows of the stage.
Are you kidding? Come on. Well, yeah. So anyway.
That's the
world according to Joe Cooper.
That's it. I come up with the idea.
You expect me to be the implementer. Right. Exactly. Know, that's the joke.
That's how our marriage works. Same thing with, I feel like an apple pie. Will you please
You don't
make
look
one?
Like an apple pie.
Ah. But an up.
Right.
That's, but yeah, the one thing is, I mean, you have gotten very good at making blankets and hats and stuff of that nature. I mean,
yeah, it's my crafty side coming up.
You are. I mean, you went from scrapbooking and now is scrapbooking just a thing? I mean, other than doing it
well,
online,
there's trends in that kind of stuff. It's like just like everything else, right? It just depends on what your focus is going to be. I still have all the stuff. I could go down in the basement right now and make it 20 scrapbooks, just like I could go down in the basement right now and sew up a blanket or
Santa's workshop.
Exactly. So, you know, it just depends.
I am impressed all the time when you can go down there and come up within a half hour with two brand new gifts.
Yeah, well, sometimes I can pull that off. Sometimes no, and it is a longer process, but yeah. It just depends.
But that's the beauty of, you know, having that talent of, you know, you can paint a picture or create something. I mean, usually my biggest talent is getting on Amazon and ordering something.
That's not true. You have a Rain Man depth of knowledge about baseball in particular, but lots of sports, and you pay attention to the details and you get real passionate about it. So that's just something that's completely out of my wheelhouse. So,
well, we're doing this today because first time, maybe in the spring we might bring someone else, you know, that we know to the show. We call it our show if we get picked up by the network.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
But I can see where this idea, you can talk about anything you want.
Sure.
And you don't have to be interrupted with commercials and, you know, worry about that, you know, if you're making the ratings or something like that. You just throw out your opinion.
It's just for fun, right.
And you're talking. And then people can listen to you any time of day.
Yeah.
And I think it's a good idea. We tried this for the first time today to see what the way the system works. And now Calvin is able to come with us, our 4-year-old Labrador service dog.
He's sleeping on the floor in the studio.
Kevin will be our guest next time when he's woken.
He's pretty quiet, so he might not speak and stuff, you know.
No, he does do, you know, he does snore a lot. We can get that on tape.
Yeah.
And Kelvin does make a lot of noise when he wants to. But I think this was a good idea. We had a chance here to come in the Royal Oak and see where. There's actually a few other studios. If you ever come into one of these places, I'd say there's about 6 to 8 rooms, and people are just talking in groups of sometimes 6 or 8 people. In our case, just the two of us. And it's like a bedroom size that's got microphones all set up, and every Saturday we can come in here. Well, I should say, I think once every 3 months. So we'll plan it again in the spring, maybe when our cousin Rob comes in from New York.
Oh, that's so funny.
Rob can give us his viewpoint of...
Oh, my God, it would just be all baseball.
No, Rob could give us his viewpoint of Madison Heights in Royal Oak and Ferndale in the 80s and the 70s.
You're so funny.
He's like the history of Metro Detroit.
But now he's a, like, 35-year New Yorker, so...
He's still a Detroiter.
Look at the emphasis on that. Okay. Pledge allegiance. It's all okay.
You don't turn in your nationality You don't turn in other things about yourself. You're born in Detroit. You are a Detroiter.
That's hilarious. That's funny.
Well, hopefully Rob and Liz are listening to this one day. And we will tell them we dedicated the final.
Now that you gave him a shout out, yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's like, you're next, Rob. You'll be my next guest on Cooperstown Live.
Is that what you're calling this?
I call it Cooperstown. I don't know what else to call it.
Okay.
We could call it Calvin.
Cooperstown might have a problem with that, but you know, whatever. That's fine.
How about Calvin and Company?
Calvin and Company. We need to work on the name a little bit, but
yeah that's true. Okay. That'll be, you know, our next thing.
Project. Yeah.
Our listeners can get back to us.
We've
had a chance to do this, and I think we'll do it again.
Nice.
Thanks for coming in, hon.
Love you.
Love you too. Bye-bye.